From Capital Broadcasting Company and Mix 101.5, this is Scene and Screen. I'm your host, Ian Ramsey, with Burning Coal Theater's founding artistic director, Jerome Davis.
Hello, Diane.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me back again.
Oh, it's great to talk to you always.
Thank you. Same here.
I love what you do over there.
Thank you,
at Burning Coal. And I'm sorry I missed Tally's Folly.
Oh, it was a joy. It was one of the great joys of my life, working on that play.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of buzz about it, especially on social media.
Well, you know, you might have hit upon something when a woman who's running for the Congress takes time out of her schedule to come and see it. Deborah Ross, who just won the primary. She took time to come and see the show and then posted about it on social media.
So, okay.
You know, that's about as busy as you get when you're doing that. You know, maybe running for president's busier. But,
I would think a little bit. That's pretty cool. Well, and sort of a tease, you have what you're calling a sequel to that in your upcoming season.
Yes, we do.
We won't say too much yet. Jerry and I will be back with more. That's our topic today, Burning Coal Theater on Scene and Screen. Diane Ramsey back here with, do you mind if I call you Jerry? That's what
fine.
You usually let me do.
Yes,
so
yes.
Jerry Davis from the Burning Coal Theater. And you guys recently announced your 2020-2021 upcoming season that you're calling Going Places. So why you call it Going Places?
Well, I don't pick seasons based on any kind of theme. But what I have found over the years is that one pretty quickly emerges. And what I noticed in that the sort of common factor in all of these stories is they're all about people who are on a journey. You know, there's a famous saying that all stories are either someone goes on a journey or a stranger comes to town, which is effectively someone goes on a journey.
Well, they're still on a journey, true.
And it's very hard to think of a great work of art that doesn't fit into one of those two categories. But yeah, that's the whole season is about people who are trying to get somewhere else, right? And in some cases they do, and in some cases they don't. And in some cases, they use unscrupulous means to do so. But it's a fascinating set of plays and one that I'm very excited about.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. Well, it starts off with 100 Words for Snow,
right?
October 8th through 25th. So I'm guessing that takes place in a colder climate.
It's funny you should say that. It's about a 15-year-old girl. I should say, first of all, it was written by a woman named Teddy Hennessy, and it played at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and then moved into London a year or so ago and was an enormous success and came back again in a slightly different format and was an even bigger success. And so it's starting to get its sea legs across the pond, as they say over here in the U.S. We thought we were going to be the first U.S. production, but since we announced for October, someone else has announced they're doing it in, I think, April of this year. So we won't be quite the U.S. premiere, but we will certainly be the Southeastern premiere of this play. And it's about a young girl, a 15-year-old girl, whose father dies very suddenly and unexpectedly. And he was a geography teacher and always loved the four corners of the globe, but never traveled anywhere. And so to honor him, she decides that she's going to abscond with his ashes and scatter them at the North Pole. So she sets off on a journey with her little backpack and, you know, her cell phone. And it's about whether or not she gets there. And if she gets there, what does she do when she gets there? And who does she meet along the way? So it's a terrific little story. And one you should definitely bring Kleenex if you go, because it's a very sad and beautiful, beautiful story. It'll make you cry.
Oh, wow. Well, that is interesting. When you said 100 Words for Snow, for some reason that reminded me of the indigenous people of, like, Alaska. They have different versions of it.
It's so important in their lives. And the play actually says that they actually don't have 100 Words for Snow.
That's an old myth.
Darn
it.
That they do have a number of words, but not anywhere near that many. And interestingly, that same idea comes up in 5th of July, which is another play that we're doing on the season. And again, that was not in any way intentional, but it's funny how these ideas sort of seep up into the zeitgeist.
All right. Well, before you get to the 5th of July, Evita is your next show for the end of 2020, December 3rd through 20th. Now, This is a rare production.
Yeah.
I can't remember it being produced in the Triangle.
I think North Carolina Theater may have done it a few years ago, and it's probably
been a while.
Come through in a tour. It's a beautiful piece of work, and it's difficult. You know, it requires a really great voice. You know, there are essentially only three leads in that play. There's Evita and there's Shay, mm-hmm. which was originally a role played by Mandy Patinkin. And then Perone himself, Ava Perone is married to. And those are really the three voices that carry the play. And it's very operatic. It's very beautiful. It's very exhilarating. I have a slight Evita story, if you don't mind.
Okay, please.
I love to tell. When I was a kid, I was probably 17 or 18, and Evita was up for a Tony Award for Best New Musical that year. And this was back in the day when we had rotary phones and things like that.
Will this be Patti LuPone?
Yeah, it was LuPone and Mandy Patinkin. And so they did, as they do on the Tony Awards, you know, they did a scene from it, you know, and they chose the finale to Act One. Just this exhilarating kind of fist-pumping spectacle with all these rioters on stage with signs and smoke bombs and going off everywhere.
Because of the revolution.
The revolution is at hand, and it's really exhilarating. So I watched this with my mouth open. I run to my telephone. I start dialing my friends, and I couldn't get any of them on the phone. The lines were all busy because they were all trying to call each other to say, did you see that? So I've been a fan of Evita since that moment. And it's a lovely and exhilarating piece of theater and a very important piece. It's about a woman, you know, from the wrong side of the tracks, as mm-hmm. they say, who is determined to get somewhere, you know, to go somewhere. And in this case, to go to the top of the country, Argentina's political world. And it's about tactics that she does or doesn't choose to use in order to get there. And I think as, you know, as we see the growth of women into a position of equality in our society, or at least moving in that direction, it is important to reflect upon what some might have to give up in order to get there, or whether it's worth it. I think it's a really interesting play to be doing right now amidst the Me Too movement. And that
And I've never seen it, so I'm like so psyched.
It's really good.
Yeah. And then, of course, the aforementioned A Fifth of July. That will be your first show of 2021, January 28th through February 14th.
That's right.
So is this the one that's sort of a sequel?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Interestingly, Lanford Wilson, one of the half dozen great American playwrights of the 20th century, wrote Fifth of July first before he wrote Tally's Folly, which is the prequel to it. And it's usually the other way around. Usually if you write stories, you write them in sequence. But Fifth of July is set in 1975, the day after the 4th of July, obviously, in this farmhouse. And it's about the Tally clan and some of their friends who have come gathered at the house for a funeral, and things that happen over the course of that summer night. And then one of the characters in it, an elderly woman named Sally Tally, the reason they're all there is that her husband, Matt Friedman, has died, and
she's come back to
bury his ashes. And so he, Lanford Wilson, then went back and wrote Tally's Folly, which is set on the same property 30 years earlier in 1944 on the 4th of July.
Ooh.
And it's the date that Matt and Sally had when they decided to get married, basically become a couple. And so so he wrote that one after he wrote Fifth of July, but Fifth of July comes 30 years later. So this is the very exciting part about this, and I'll try to be succinct with it. But the woman, Trish Hawkins, who played Sally Tally in Broadway with Judd Hirsch, you know, it's a two-character play, that it was a major part of her life as an artist. We did a podcast with her while we were doing Tally's Folly. And I asked, has anybody ever offered you Sally Tally in Fifth of July? And she paused and she said, no.
What? That's surprising.
But about 3 days later, I got an email from her saying, okay, you've got me daydreaming about playing Sally Tally again in North Carolina. And I said, come on down. And so she signed on to do it.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So we will be the first theater in the world to have the Sally Tally from Tally's Folly play the role again, a little bit more than 30 years on, playing Sally as both a young person and as an elderly person.
What a treat, though, for her, I'm sure, too.
She's delighted.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And for the entire Triangle to see that.
It'll be fun. And I think it might get us a little national publicity.
Oh, it better. That is really cool. Oh, man. Okay. Well, we have another show for 2021. You're ending with Anton Chekhov's classic, The Three Sisters.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Another big undertaking.
Don't
like a challenge or anything, do you, Jerry?
It's a huge undertaking, yeah. Well, and again, it's about, you know, the famous line, I want to go to Moscow, you know, is repeated constantly in Three Sisters, you know. So it's a play about these people, these three sisters who aspire to something beyond their current life and whether or not they ever actually do it, whether life gets in the way and that sort of thing. So it's a very poignant way to end a season about movement and about growth and about progress. And so we're looking forward to it. I think it'll be a fun year.
It will. And still, again, a lot of focus on women, which you're very, very generous to do that. You've been doing that for the last few seasons.
Well, it's getting easier to do. You know, it used to be very difficult because you'd pick up a play and there'd be 8 or 9 men's roles
right.
and 1 or 2 women's roles, and it's gotten a lot easier in my adult life because so many more playwrights are writing plays for women. But generally speaking, the canon of good dramatic literature that is about women and by women, and those plays are now much more plentiful than they were before, and so it becomes an easier decision.
But still, no. Thank you for doing that, because that's pretty amazing. More with Jerry Davis from Burning Coal Theater coming up on Scene and Screen. Okay, we're back. I'm Diane Ramsey with Jerome Davis from Burning Coal Theater, the founding artistic director. Before we even get to your 2020-21 season,
yes.
You still have one more show this year.
Yes,
you
do.
Might as well just go ahead and tell us about that one, because it's coming up in April.
Sure, and that's a play called Silent Sky. It's by Lauren Gunderson, who's a playwright originally from the South, but it's about a woman, Henrietta Leavitt, a real person, an American pioneer in the field of astronomy. She worked at the Harvard Astronomy Lab in the early part of the 20th century, but she worked as a technician, and it was a time in which women were literally not allowed to touch the telescope.
Oh, my goodness.
And she discovered something in the work that she was doing. She was cleaning these plates of glass onto which had been built these
images
of the universe.
Right, that they do.
And she started seeing a pattern in it. And she tried to get people to listen to her, and nobody would listen to her. And finally, they started listening, and then they started taking the credit for her ideas.
Of course.
And so it's a very fun and a very lightweight play, which is one of the hallmarks of Lauren Gunderson's work. She writes about very serious issues, but she writes about them in a very light and fun and funny way. And in fact, she is this year, for the second time in 3 years, the most produced playwright in America.
Oh, gosh. Good for her.
Whose name isn't William Shakespeare. You have to add that little clause on at the end. But but she's quite a person and somebody that we can all, as Southerners, be proud of. You know,
I would say that's pretty impressive. Okay, now, people get tickets through your website.
Indeed.
Is that correct? Well,
burningcoal.org.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Or they can call. I guess the phone number, what I have is 919-834-4001.
That's
correct.
4001.
Okay. You will probably want to go ahead and get the season tickets for 2020-2021.
Yes.
It's so hard to say that.
Who can
so
believe it's already the 20s?
I know, right? And that would be all those 4 shows that you just mentioned in the earlier segment. But then you also have something. What are the Breakfast Club series?
Sure.
What's that?
Well, if you want to spend $30 more and why wouldn't you? You can get tickets to each of these 3 plays that we do over the summer. We don't announce them yet, but they're done, generally speaking, in collaboration with young companies or young artists that are just starting to emerge in our area. Like this year, we have a piece called According that is going to be a physical movement and I think some aerial work as well. That's one of the plays, you know, and it's just a couple of women who moved here from out of state, and they have been here for a couple of years, and they've been looking to start a company. They had one when they lived up in the Northeast, and they've been looking to restart it down here. And so they came to me and said, is there any chance you would produce a play with us? And I said, sure. How do you feel about our second stage series? And they're all on board. So that'll be this June. But for the subscriptions for next year, that would be next June.
Gotcha.
And we don't know what the three plays will be yet. But they're always something that challenge our audiences and that challenge us a little bit in terms of how we use the building or whether we use the building. Sometimes we go off-site to do these plays. So we try to keep it open and keep it moving and keep new blood coming into the building as much as we can, and that's what the second stage series, the Breakfast Club series, does. And then on top of all that, we have a morning in October when we all get together, members of the Breakfast Club, and have breakfast with me, and I talk about theater and they talk about
nice.
Theater and about what they love and what they are excited about and. Shared experiences, and it's fun. We have it catered by the Flying Biscuit, so what could be bad about
God,
that?
Oh, God, that does sound good. Yeah. But talk about your space anyway, because it's an interesting space.
It sure is.
Very intimate.
And in fact, we're celebrating an anniversary. We're doing a lot this year, Diane. In the summer of 1960, the school board met in the Murphy School Auditorium where we perform, and they voted to begin the desegregation of Raleigh schools.
Right.
And that fall, a couple of months later, a young 7-year-old African-American student named Bill Campbell, he became the first black student to attend a white school. And Bill grew up and became the mayor of Atlanta. His brother Ralph became the state auditor here in North Carolina.
Yeah, I thought those names
Ralph
were
Campbell.
Familiar.
Yep. Yeah. But that vote in 1960 took place in our theater in the room.
That is so cool. What a history, you know?
It is, yeah. And it's probably why the building's still there. It's a good space, and it's a historic space, and you can feel it. You know, when you're in the room, you can feel that history. You can feel the weight of the decisions and those people didn't know in 1960 what was going to happen if they did that. They didn't know if they'd make it out of that building alive or get home without being, pioneers don't know, they talk about going places.
Anyway. Pretty neat. And talk a little bit about, for people who aren't familiar with Burning Coal, your whole mission, because you really have a special place in the theater community, I think.
Well, I appreciate that. I think the building is a lot of it. But the mission has three words at its core: literate, visceral, and affecting. And by literate, I mean that we always look for plays in which language is a central part of what's being presented. So it isn't theater of spectacle. It's theater where language is at the core. It doesn't have to be spoken or even written language. It can be gestures. It can be dance, that sort of thing. But what's most important is that it be consistent and that it be accurate, And so so the accuracy of language, the centrality of language is important. By visceral, we mean that we want material that hits people emotionally and intellectually and knocks them back in their chair and surprises them, because I think that's when you're most vulnerable and you're open, and that's what we think theater should be. And then affecting means that we want to do plays that ask our audience to respond to the plays and then go out into the world and do something about whatever it is that the play is talking about. We want to affect the audience. And, of course, that's what all artists want to do. So our mission, has been very helpful to us over the years. My wife, Simi Kastner, and I came up with that. It's more her than me, I think.
But, good for her.
Yes.
There's so much happening at Burning Coal Theater, and you are at 224 Polk Street in downtown Raleigh, not too far from the Krispy Kreme, as you've told me before.
Halfway between the Governor's Mansion and the Krispy Kreme.
What a great location.
Yeah, it means everybody knows at least one of those locations. Right.
Probably.
Usually it's the Krispy Kreme.
Yeah, I was thinking that, but I wasn't going to say it. Thank you again, Jerome Davis, the founding artistic director of Burning Coal Theater Company. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to me today.
It is truly my pleasure.
I'm Diane Ramsey. Thank you for listening to Scene and Screen. If you like the show, I'd appreciate you giving us a review and sharing it with your friends. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app. This podcast is a production of Mix 101.5, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network.